What up, everybody? It's Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. John LaRocca here with me tonight. We have a pretty important show here. Joe Biden did the State of the Union address. We're going to do the State of the Podcast address here in a second. The NBA trade deadline is going nuts.
Yeah.
So if people are following that, Kevin Durant just got traded like right before we got out and right before we started the show. So
Twitter
craziness
went down.
Is happening.
Twitter went down.
Yeah, that's because of low self-esteem Elon Musk, man. He's just screwing stuff up.
Yeah, oh, yeah. What's this cord? Oh, man, he's a smart guy.
And we have a Discord for the network that we are in beta testing with. So shout out to Anthony, a.k.a. Kid Machiavelli, who created it. He's kind of been pushing us to go the Discord route. And then shout out to Jeremy Finestone, who put a lot of the channels together for us. And we're doing it as a beta. There's a handful of folks in there kind of testing it out. We had a little dynamite thread going. And so if you want to be part of the beta, we're not going to just post the invite link anywhere and everywhere yet. We will do that at some point, but shoot me an email, gg@fightgamemedia.com. It was going to happen at some point, but Facebook kicking me out and not letting me back in kind of sped that process up. So we're moving that direction. So help us test it out. Shoot me an email and we'll send you an invite. Also, after John and I, we're going to do our Dynamite review. I did an interview yesterday with somebody who is on local radio here in the Bay Area, and he also has a podcast. He's interviewed Tony Khan more times than Dave and I, which is kind of crazy because we've interviewed him a handful of times. His name is Baby Huey, and he is a radio on 107 The Bone out here in San Francisco Bay Area. And he's just done a ton of wrestling interviews. And so I did something with him on the Fight Game Media YouTube channel. So we're taking a piece of that, about 2/3 of that. And that'll be the end of our show here. And one more thing is, gosh, this is a long time ago now. Doohan, my good friend Doohan, who I've done stuff with in the past. He's helped me on this podcast back in the day. He and I did a Rocky podcast. This has to be long, more than 5 years ago. And what we did is we deep dove into every single Rocky movie. And that was on our old network. When this podcast, before this podcast moved to F4W, we were through Blue Wire. And so the feed, that old feed is where those podcasts were. I mean, you may be able to find them and download them, possibly. I'm not 100% sure, but I still had them. So with Creed 3 coming out in, I don't know, like 3 weeks or something, I decided that I'm going to republish all of those Rocky podcasts and in preparation for Creed 3. So if people want to listen to them, they're still the thing that I get hit up about the most for our old stuff is like, whatever happened to those Creed podcasts? Where can I find them? So here they are. They're going to be on the Patreon, $5 a month. You can check it out. Okay. State of the podcast addressed here. So something I've been thinking about for a little while, which is our podcast is heavily reliant on AEW Dynamite. The second Dynamite is done on the West Coast, John jumps on and we record. And I had been thinking of changing days for this show. And I hit up John yesterday and I was like, what do you think about recording on Thursdays instead of Wednesdays? I'll let you know the reasons here in a second. And not being reliant to waiting for Dynamite to end, which, you know, ends at 10 p.m. West Coast. Then John and I jump on for an hour and a half. It gets pretty late. So we decided we're going to move to Thursdays, Thursday night. So you'll get the podcast Friday morning. Now, Wednesday night, Dave and Brian kind of dominate the entire wrestling podcast industry with their show on Wednesday night, Wrestling Observer Radio. So we are always going to be in the shadow of that. We will still be in the shadow of Brian and Vinny. They record Thursday night. But, you know, I think the show that we do is a little bit more sort of review based, news oriented. And Brandon and Vinny have a really good time. And then they've, you know, they're the classic duo in pro wrestling podcasts. But, you know, there might be a better contrast than going head up with Brian and Dave. But so that's part of the reason. The other part of the reason is I sense I'm being a little proactive here. I may be going back to work at least one day, going into the office one day a week. And I'm thinking it's going to be Wednesday, just because that's the day that the office wants people to be in the company wants people to be in the office. So if I was to do that, I would drive home. I would watch the show late. I'd be miserable because I'd be tired from my, you know, 90-minute commute. And so that's the other reason. And so Thursday gives us a little bit more freedom to, you know, to not have to watch Dynamite immediately live. We can check in. And if we have something going on with the family, we can check out. And so that's so what is the show going to change? It'll change because we're just not going to review Dynamite with a magnifying glass like we've been doing. A little bit, you know, we'll still talk about it because it'll be the show that is the most recent, you know, unless we start reviewing Impact, but we don't want to. Mike and JD kind of have that one on lock. Yeah. I don't want to go head up with those guys. So it's just, I think it's a better thing for us going into the future. I think our Dynamite review is probably the most critical one that I've heard out there. So I'm going to miss doing that because I thought, you know, a lot of people love Dynamite and I enjoy Dynamite, you know, I'd say 7 times out of 10. And even in the 3 times I don't like it, there's stuff that happens that you want to talk about. So we'll still cover like the big stuff coming out of Dynamite, but it'll also give us a chance to talk a little bit more about some of the big picture stuff that's happening in wrestling that, because we're so focused on Dynamite, we don't generally get to talk about on this show. So next week will be a day later, and I think we're going to be doing that from here on out. So could we change back? Of course, anything can happen. You know, we only record once a week generally, so it's really going to be reliant on our schedule, you know, what makes sense for us. And also, you know, the one thing is Thursday nights on the lark that our wives go to bed a little early, we could start recording a little early too, and possibly doing some late night live streams, you know, once a month would be kind of fun to do that. So that's in the cards as well. So next week starting, we're going to start recording Thursday night. Most of you will listen Friday morning, and it'll kind of be the sort of instead of the Dynamite review, it'll be what's big stuff coming out of these shows, looking ahead to the weekend, previewing some of the stuff that's on the weekend, and that's kind of how we'll do it. But you know, we're going to test things out. The hard part for listeners is like they're so used to like looking forward to this specific thing, and we'll be creative and we'll be open to ideas and we'll listen to feedback and just, you know, what we're going to adjust. And I think we'll be able to adjust. It'll still be good. And so that is the plan from here on out, at least in the immediate future. Before we get to the Dynamite review, a couple more things. Actually, we're going to do our thumbs up, thumbs down as well. Quick shout out to Jerry the King Lawler, who had a stroke, and it sounds like he's doing better. And I think he's expected to make a full recovery. As far as I understand, I saw some photos of him where he looked good, but they said, you know, his ability to speak wasn't all there yet. So good luck to Jerry on his recovery there. That's a big one, man. Like, you know, talk about living legends in professional wrestling. Like, that's a giant one right there.
Yeah. One of my all-time favorites. And Dutch Mantel, I believe on Facebook, maybe it was Twitter, or maybe all social media that he has, wrote that he did talk to Lawler on the phone and he can clearly understand him. And so that's good. Good news. It was pretty cool to see the pictures of Jimmy Hart stopping by, his old rival, Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, just you know, the, thinking about, it's just kind of cool. Like there's, you know, Jimmy Hart, like he's equipped with a folder with some old cards from the past and just sharing stories. And I don't know. I just warmed my heart seeing those pictures. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad Jerry Lawler is going to make sounds like I'm making a full recovery. And, you know, the king lives. So yeah, that's awesome.
All right. So let's go thumbs up, thumbs down. Did you want to start with the thumbs up today or this week?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to start with a wrestler thumbs up. Wesley from NXT.
Mm.
Did you watch The Takeover?
Yes, and it was going to be my thumbs down joke.
Oh, no, don't worry. I got that on my thumbs down too. But I want to give a thumbs up to you because Wesley, I think he's a fantastic athlete. And I really like his underdog. He's a smaller guy. He's going to be the underdog. I'm just a fan of his.
Yeah.
And to see him come out and that reaction of the crowd, like he had the crowd from, you know, from his entrance. And so I thought him and Dijak had a really good match. You know, I wasn't a big fan of the interference with Tony D'Angelo, yes, which I was pretty shocked when Tony D'Angelo came out. The big reaction for Tony D'Angelo, the big Tony D chant. So it's cool to see, you know, we only see it from the CWC, right? That audience. So it's cool to see them in a big arena and then, yes, seeing them, who was getting reactions from that brand, right? But I thought Wesley, you know, was tremendous. And of course, Dijak was a great dance partner with him and really works well in those matches. So shout out to him.
I thought that was so fun. That match was so fun. It kind of reminded me of like a throwback takeover match. Mm-hmm. And I like when, you know, I'm not following NXT, and the only reason I watched it is because I had to sub for Brian Alvarez on Saturday night. And so I had to watch, I had to watch that show. And then there was the Fedor fight, and, you know, Fedor was that one was done in minutes. So that wasn't too bad, but otherwise I wouldn't have watched it. And, I was kind of like after that first match, I was like, oh, wow. I'm kind of glad that I had to watch this show. And then after the second and third and fourth and fifth, I was like, not as glad anymore to watch that show. Okay. So my thumbs up is Adam Cole. And the main reason is because Dave and I recorded with Adam Cole on Friday. And when you get such a thoughtful person to do an interview with, it is so fun and it is so easy, and you don't need to ask leading questions because he's just going with you.
Yeah.
And he just has a really good understanding of how to present himself in a good manner. And I just thought, man, you know, there's no wonder why this guy is so good on the microphone. Like, he's just awesome on it.
Yeah.
And it made me think of a lot of the thoughtful interviews that we've done. And, you know, it is one way for pro wrestlers to put themselves out there to this audience, to this internet audience, which is more important than ever. You know, Kenny Omega, excellent. He's so fun to talk to because he is thoughtful. Like, he really thinks about what he's going to say. Bryan Danielson was awesome. Like, that was, I wasn't sure if we were ever going to get to do that one. And then when he came to AEW, you know, we got the chance. Like, that one was just a blast. And Cole, to me, is right up there. And, you know, we've done others that have been, you know, really good. Cody and, you know, Tony Khan is a different type of interview because Tony Khan is, you know, half pitch man and, you know, kind of thing. But it, you know, it's a different thing, but you also get news out of an interview like that. So, you know, these guys who make the effort, who spend the time, who make sure that the websites that matter, you know, in this industry, that they get a little bit of coverage from the fans when they do such a good job. And, you know, I know WWE doesn't do this. And actually, in the conversation for the second half of this show, Baby Huey, a lot of times he's interviewing WWE wrestlers for radio hits, and he, you know, he explains why sometimes it's a little bit different because they're hitting their main targets and their main points in like a short amount of time, and what sort of separates. So I know WWE does some of them, you know, they do them every once in a while, but man, I would love to see somebody like, Seth Rollins do a similar interview to the one that that we did with Adam Cole. Now, there are reasons why, you know, in WWE lore, like nothing else matters. So he wouldn't probably talk too much about the ROH stuff, which would be very interesting. So, but I just wanted to shout out Adam Cole and other wrestlers who are just so thoughtful with the media, because, you know, it is a way to get over in 2023 with people. Like I got so much feedback on that, just going like, gosh, Adam Cole is such a nice guy, man. He seems like such a nice guy. Like the whole theme of that whole thing was like, I just want to hang out with Adam Cole, 'cause he just looks like he's a nice guy. So good job. Good job for Cole. All right. What about thumbs down?
Thumbs downs from the same show, TakeOver, the main event, Bron Breakker, Grayson Waller, just oil and water, man. You know, like they just didn't connect in there, and it was just rough. It was a rough match. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't what I expected. I expected a real breakout performance from both men, and they just didn't gel. And it was a really disappointment. I thought things were going good. Once Grayson's music hit, crowd gave a really good, get some good heat. I'm like, oh, okay, this is going to be a pretty fired up match here. Braun came out, big reaction, bell ring, and like they weren't into it. It was
Dave thought Braun was possibly hurt, because he was like, did the way that he saw Braun do some things, he's like, is his shoulder hurt? Like, what's going on?
No, he wasn't hurt. I just think it didn't click. They reacted to the superplex spot, but that took for a while, you know. I think a lot of it too, I think if they would have added a stipulation, this is where the escape the cage rule would have really worked for heat with Grayson Waller. Because the fans maybe probably didn't think at the end of the day Grayson Waller is going to win by pinning Bron Breakker or even submitting Bron Breakker. So I thought if they would have, Grayson, I think his character would have made a perfect, it would make sense for him to complain about having to go in this cage match after, after the faulty rope situation that ended up being countered out. You know, he would have won if the faulty ropes didn't break and all this stuff. He could have made some excuse and held against WWE. And now they want him to wrestle in a cage match, right? He could have said, well, if I'm going to wrestle in the cage match, I should be the one that can win by escaping the cage and Bron Breakker shouldn't, right? So then you have that to really like, so when the fans could probably bite like, oh, shoot, he could cheat one out, right? Bron could lose by Grayson being a little weasel and getting out somehow, some way. I think that would have added to the drama of the match, but I just think they just didn't gel. This didn't gel, didn't work. I like both men a lot. I'm a big fan of both, but I just didn't, together they didn't work together, but I'm looking forward to LA. I think Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes are going to just, I think they'll tear it up come that show.
That match was bad too, though. Carmelo and Apollo.
Yeah. I don't know what was going. I think another thing, that's why I tuned in actually, because I had to go, I came home late. Tuned in, that was going on, and I'm watching this choreographed performance. Like, it didn't feel like a match. They're just doing stuff. Hayes kept shutting down Apollo. Like, it never got going, right? And I like the two fall straight finish, because you gotta make, Carmelo strong going to the title match. I wasn't feeling that match either. That match you feel, but I don't know if it was Carmelo, maybe it could have been on more Apollo there, but I think Breakker and Melo is going to be pretty good in LA. So I'm looking forward to that.
I hope so.
And plus, as you noticed, I don't know if you saw the results from NXT this week. I watched majority of the show. A lot of the UK talent's now finally coming back. We got Gallus back. We got Ilya back. Mieko Satomura is going to be back. Mm-hmm. She's back with the company. So, I think the talent quality, in-ring quality, is definitely going to go up for 2023.
They gotta bring some people up though. Like Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes have been there forever now,
and they might be up. They might be up soon. I think I can see Carmelo maybe going after LA. I could see that. I feel like Von Wagner's going up because he just lost to Dijak on television. So yeah, no, I think you'll see. But Breakker, you know, unlike what they did with him, they had him on Raw a few times. Like, I wouldn't bring that guy up unless Triple H definitely has a plan for him, you know? Like, I wouldn't just have him come up and just be another guy. You really got to, like you said before, like you even talked about it, like you'd make them the super hot rookie, right?
Yep.
And that's what he should be.
But, you know, the problem is they have a guy who kind of looks like him and kind of is over the top like him, but is nowhere near as talented as him in Boogs. And they're trying to make that happen. And I'm just like,
I don't think that will affect Bron Breakker. He's just going to stand out way more. He's a special talent. Boogs, I like Boogs. Totally charismatic guy. Big dude. You know, he's fun, but he's a mid-card guy, right?
Yeah.
Bron Breakker is his A+.
All right. So my thumbs down is WWE booking. Now, not all WWE booking, because I don't know if you watched Cody and Paul Heyman cut the promo of the segment of the year so far in 2023.
I decided to be like the young kids, and I watched Raw via YouTube clips.
YouTube?
Yeah. The other night. So I got the gist of pretty much everything that happened on that show.
Yeah, but that was awesome. Cody was really great. Good. Heyman was great. Man, I was like, that's the money promo, right? Like, mm-hmm. I almost think they did it too early. I'm like, man, you know, we still got so many months left until WrestleMania. Maybe we should have saved that one. But so that's great. So it's not all WWE booking, but I had a small issue with Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn. For the first time since they really went big with that angle, mm-hmm. it felt like just another angle to me. It felt like he's going to be the next guy on Roman Reigns' list, the way that they did that. What I wanted to see, and some of this is just my own personal interest in this, is I wanted to see, because you saw that Royal Rumble pop mm-hmm. that Sammy got, which one of the biggest that we've heard in a long time on a WWE show, like it's so big that however that area was mic'd, it like went distorted because it was so hot. Mm-hmm. Like that's like the audio itself was hot. Like I heard the distortion in the microphones. And I wanted to see them take that to the next level. Roman's going to win this match, and I'm fine with Roman winning this match. But I wanted to see them try and prove to me, the fan who, you know, I'm not going to get fooled too many times on this stuff, but I want to feel like Sammy's got a chance, right? Like, that's the whole thing here. We're in Montreal. Sammy's got a chance. Well, I want to fall for some of these near falls. But the way that they presented that angle to me, it made it feel like, okay, this is just there. He's just another guy, you know, to face Roman. And I don't know. I got this weird feeling now. I hope it doesn't happen, because this is Triple H and this isn't Vince. There's going to be some sort of screwiness, I think, in this match.
Yeah, for sure.
So it just felt a little bit too samey to me, whereas I thought what they'd been doing just felt a little bit more organic. And then so when I saw SmackDown, I was like, oh, this just feels like normal WWE storytelling. So that was one. The other one, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this one. What the hell is Becky Lynch doing at WrestleMania? What program does she possibly have? Because if she's your top woman star in the company, she doesn't have much, at least. I'm trying to think, you know, what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
They brought Lita back to do something with Bayley. It sounds like it's Ronda and Shayna against the tag champs, Damage mm-hmm. Control. So where does that leave Becky? Is it going to be Becky and Lita and Trish doing something? I'm just kind of confused about it just seems like, you know, they got these men's matches built up crazy, and the women's ones don't feel as special. Like, even the Rhea and Charlotte thing will be cool. Excuse me, but we've seen it already. I am interested to see where it goes. Bianca,
but you don't want to see that
Asuka,
again.
Asuka,
right? We saw Bianca Becky. I still think that Raw title is going to be a four way or some sort. I could see that happening. Unfortunately, not that I want to see that. Like, just see like cramming, you know, multiple people in a multiple person match, just because that's what they do on these shows. But you know, it's funny because, like, you know, I don't. When it comes to WWE viewing, I mainly watch SmackDown and sort of and been watching NXT here and there. Raw's kind of like the one I kind of like, I'll just look at your results the next day and see if there's anything I need to go back and see. So I haven't really even thought of Becky really as so any plans right now. But I could, like I said, I think she fits in most likely in some kind of four-way for the title. Unless they have some kind of special tag team match, like you said, a Trish Stratus. But is Trish going to be a heel? You don't want to boot Trish. You know what I mean? You don't want to boot Trish. So I don't know how Lita plays into it. They brought her back for a reason. I'm sure she's going to be doing something. But I'm going to say four away for the title, as boring as that is, you know. But, I mean, who's Bianca got? You said Asuka is...
I mean, we see the chamber is full of, you know,
it's true. There's a chamber match for the shot for her.
Yeah, it's
right.
Two wrestlers who are being pushed at this point, which is Asuka and Raquel.
Why is Carmella in it? I like Carmella and all, but like, she must be just there to lose. I mean, obviously, you know what I mean? Like,
Piper Niven would have been a nice. Not nice in that match, I thought.
I think, no, I agree. That's one of the people I thought for sure. Like, why isn't Piper in it? But I can see Triple H thinking, like, I don't want her be in this match where she has to lose, right? She can be someone after WrestleMania that can be built up to challenge, you know, for one of the titles. So,
yeah. So my thumbs down is just. It seems like WWE is very invested in some of these, you know, men's championship programs, and they do not seem too invested in the women's ones, which, man, the last few years, they've been able to push these women's matches as very special and very important. It's just not there right now.
I think Rhea and Charlotte could be big. Rhea's pretty hot right now. You know, the whole Mamacita thing. I think that could be a big match, but it's okay. You know, 1 year, it's all about the women. They've done that for a few years. So, you know, hey, let's put the focus back on the guys. And let's be honest, the guys have been drawing the most interest right now. The Roman thing is hot. Sammy stuff, Cody. I mean, you know, are there going to be some big matches? Like, how are Logan Paul versus Seth Rollins is going to be bigger than, you know,
I don't know. If you put Rhea and Bianca, I think the intrigue would be there. And if you did Becky and Ronda and pushed it correctly, I think the intrigue would be there. Even Becky and Charlotte, if you take advantage of like that real heat that they had, you know, what was it, last year, the year before, there you could build something there too. It just seems like, for whatever reason, that the bigger programs, they don't want to go there. Maybe the talent doesn't want to do them. But I don't know. Maybe they don't want Becky and Ronda to possibly overshadow something that they think is supposed to be bigger. I don't know. I'm pretty disappointed in what they've done so far.
I think they kind of have a feeling about Ronda, where her mentality is, you know. And I think, hey, let her team with her best friend in the wrestling business, you know, is just, you know, let's keep her happy. I think Rhea and Bianca is a great match, but I think it's a great match for 2024. I think this is Rhea now needs to have that big win, and you have her on someone who's really established as, you know, one of their top women stars. Charlotte, if she beats her, which she, God help us, I hope she does, you know, you establish Rhea. That's a stamp on it, right? And then you have these two young sensations of the women's division, the new generation, you know, and that's 2024, right? So I like to see them build to that, like make that a mega match for 2024.
I don't know. One of the lessons of late is we wait for this stuff and sometimes it doesn't happen. All right, Dynamite. Let's get through Dynamite. Mm-hmm. The first match was Takeshita and MJF, and it was good. I thought it was really good. After I watch it though, I'm like, did we really need Takeshita booked in this specific match? I'm not sure, but I thought he looked great. I thought MJF looked great. Yeah. But you know, Takeshita, we saw him finally get a win, and we're like, okay, what are they gonna do? And it's like, oh no, he's gonna lose. But he loses to the champion, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I might have waited on this one, and. Cool.
I agree with you. It would have been nice if Takeshita was actually winning matches into this. Like, you know, like he wasn't just his first match wasn't Brian Cage repeat. Like he's been on a roll and has some more momentum like that. It would have been, I think the loss would have been okay here, but because he does lose too much, but it makes sense for where they're going in storyline. So I didn't really have a problem with it, but it was a good match, you know?
Yeah.
So
MJF's going back to the salt of the earth and he's trying to get the submission, but his knee is messed up, so he's doing a lot of selling. Finally he wins with salt of the earth. He pushes the referee so that he can pop Takeshita with the ring. Takeshita starts bleeding. Danielson comes out and MJF escapes. So they started hot. They started with their world title. I hope they got some good viewers here to start the show. And MJF would be back for the MJF is very lucky that I had my thumbs down already before the show started, and I wasn't going to move it because there's a promo where if he thought for 10 seconds, he would have changed his promo, but we'll get to that. Okay, Samoa Joe video package talking about Darby, then talking about Wardlow. I think that was it. There was like no Wardlow
response,
nothing.
Like maybe he's the one that came back and attacked. You think he would have something to say now or two? You know?
Yeah, nothing at all.
But again, another really good promo by Samoa Joe.
Yeah, you know? It was championship fight night because we had two titles defended. And then we had two eliminator matches. So champions were wrestling, but they're wrestling non-title matches.
They could have been three title matches if Bunny would have challenged Hayter for the title instead of eliminator. No,
instead of just accepting, just like asking for the eliminator title.
Yeah, exactly.
Eliminator match. Okay, so Bunny and Jamie Hayter was match number two. It wasn't much. They gave Bunny a little bit, but no one thinks Bunny's going to win this match. Jamie Hayter wins with the ripcord. And she could have won maybe a little bit more impressively, but I thought she won impressively enough.
There was an injury. I mean, she got so Bunny during that second exploder. There was like timing issue, and I think Hayter tried to muscle her up, and then she fell. I can't tell. Like she was holding her face, so at first I thought, oh, I mean, she might be okay, but then. She was holding her face, and then when I knew right away when she was hurt because she was down, and then when Hayter kicked her, she didn't really do anything. She didn't sell it or anything. And then Hayter picked her up and they went home because she couldn't go anymore. But let's hope it's not a serious injury. But yeah, that no one's going to believe this match. Bunny had a chance, so I wasn't that into it. Rebel looked amazing. My goodness gracious. Hayter used that as my attention the whole time, but that Rebel, man, jeez, my gosh.
You know, Hayter, she's like one of the most improved in that company. She's even not only just in wrestling, but just in presence. Like to be able to carry that title and have that presence when Britt is, right next to her and Britt's so popular. She just does such a great job. I'm so impressed with Jamie Hayter and hope that she keeps doing well.
Yeah.
All right. Renee with Saraya and Tony, Tony Storm. So that their new gimmick is they want to spray the L on the back of their opponents after they beat them. They did that to the Renegade Twins or whatever on Rampage. And so they had Leva Bates come in. And of course, Leva's name starts with an L. So they just beat her up and they spray the L on her.
I'd fire Leva Bates after this segment. Granted, it was stupid as anyways, but like come, like, this was, this scene, was this, I felt like this was a pre-tape, so they must have taped this earlier. I would say, cut, Leva, why are you selling this like it's all hokey and goofy? Like, sell it like you're really getting your ass kicked. I know it's a stupid segment, I know, inside, but if I'm like, we gotta make these people believe, right? Like,
yeah.
She was horrendous. I mean, ugh.
And here's something that only bothers me. No one else is going to complain about this, I guarantee you. But they push Renee out of the way, right?
Mm.
So Renee has a mic when she's doing these interviews. Like, she puts herself to the mic, puts the mic to the women. They push her out of the way. They are still mic'd. So what does Renee need a mic for if everyone's already mic'd in the segment? Small things like that really bother me for some reason.
Garrett directing, like, all right, Stray, keep that boom mic going. Get all this.
Exactly. And like, if it was a boom mic, yeah, then you'd hear a little bit of an adjustment to the mic because it's a little bit of a different sound. And then I'd be like, dang, that was so smart.
Then I'd be like, let's turn up the violence a little bit. Saray, grab the boom mic and slam it down on Leva Bates. Just put it in. Don't spray her. Just put it into it.
So Lexi was with MJF. And he had this like long-winded story about whether he was a scumbag or whether the fans booing turned him into a scumbag. And his whole story was to basically say that he's always been a scumbag. The story was that sometime in high school, after a football game or something, he and the girl that he was gaga over, her name was Liv, and he's got this picture with him and Liv Morgan that he likes to post on Twitter a lot. So I'm sure that's where the name came from. And he told this story about them getting in a car accident because she was giving him a BJ in the car. And they were going 90 miles per hour and they crashed into a tree and she is knocked out. And he is such a scumbag that when the cops came to see what had happened, he dragged her lifeless body into the driver's seat so that he wouldn't get in trouble. Now, on the surface of MJF lowlife promos, like, that's pretty low. Like, it's kind of like just, nah, bad taste. But that's his gig, right? He's does bad taste promos. But we just celebrated the life of Jay Briscoe on this TV show. That tragedy is still so, it hasn't been that long. Yeah. Nobody is going to quality control that thing and go, that's great idea. Let's do that next year. Like, we cannot do that right now. It is in such poor taste. The guy who his brother is going to be doing a promo on Rampage right on this show, because we do the tapings on Wednesday night. Nobody told him. Like, dude, what are you thinking? What's going on here?
I just looked at, like you said, I don't think there's that quality control. You know, I'm sure no one was thinking. If they did hear it, I'm sure Tony heard it, right? I'm sure MJF talked to him about it. They're just maybe just so scatterbrained. He didn't get really dive deep, but there's not one person that said, you know what? Maybe Lexi Nair or someone, you know, someone could have said, hey, that, you know, we just lost one of our good brothers in a car accident, you know, tragedy. We shouldn't be talking about car accidents and, you know, another your poor woman getting her heads bashed and blood everywhere and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, no, I agree 100%.
So that kind of it wasn't, you know, I didn't even really put the two and two together until later, but it was still like, it's still the character of MJF that I'm just like, he's so talented and, you know, he goes for the lowest common denominator stuff and he's so good. Like, it's kind of frustrating to me, but no, it was a little bit of a downer. And then when I sort of put two and two together, I was like, God, that was so stupid.
Yeah.
All right. Ricky Starks versus Angela Parker. Did they just make up the rules right then and there?
This is my theory, because this was supposed to happen over weeks. I think Tony Khan, you know, read the internet, listened to the podcast, especially Fight Game podcast, and every other podcast that talks about the Dynamite. And they all say the same thing, that this is just a repeat of what Daniel Bryan's going, Bryan Danielson's going through, of what other people have gone
Jericho's
through with MJF.
Done in the past, yeah.
Jericho's done this in the past. And he's like, okay, let's just do it all in one night. And that's what we got.
Okay, so do you think that his original plan was going to end with Starks not getting to Jericho?
No. I'm going to say no. Where's Action Andretti here? He's no. Where's that action at? He's done.
No. They didn't have him, because then if he would have been out there, then he'd have been the dumb babyface who didn't. How would they've done the interference?
You want to know who's dumb in this segment? AEW security. If you're going to do this, you got to have them swarm Trish Jericho. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about that. Go.
Okay. So, out Starks and Parker. The announcers seem to be confused about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really know the rules, and they were sort of guessing the rules, or maybe they got the rules like in their headset, like as it was going on, because they seemed to be a little confused. So Ricky Starks quickly beats Angelo Parker with a spear. And so then Matt Menard comes in immediately. And so they're doing, like you said, they're doing it all in one, and which even makes it even dumber that Ricky Starks accepted this, by the way.
Yeah.
Matt Menard gets rolled up immediately. So they weren't even trying with the second fall. They were trying to get to this third fall. Daniel Garcia comes out. It was either going to be him or Sammy. And as he's walking down the ramp, Sammy's music plays and Sammy's prancing on the stage. And Garcia's like, what's going on here? It was Garcia. It was Garcia in the match. And, you know, they're having a match and it goes to the outside. And Starks is near the rail. And a man in a luchador mask with a Scissor Me Daddy shirt does a spinning elbow, missed him by a mile, but hits him with the Judas effect. These poor announcers had to in another company, someone would have immediately yelled, that dastardly Chris Jericho, damn it, we should have known better.
Yeah.
You know, and so Taz like laughs through this whole thing. He's like, I think we know what that move was.
And then like Excalibur's like, yeah, he hit him with some kind of spinning elbow. And Tony Schiavone's like, yeah, you know, that's what he says. And then like they all looked at each other, got excited, and they're like, a Judas effect, and all, oh, it was so bad, so bad.
God. So obviously it's Jericho. Garcia throws Ricky back into the ring, pins him, and Jericho unmasks, heel smile, and outsmarted this stupid baby face.
The best part, well, not it's a low part, but I I was laughing my ass off. My beautiful wife Katrina's getting the kids' lunches ready. She said, what are you laughing about? I'm all, just how dumb this segment is right here. There is the fan with the mask and who just hit one of the performers over the guardrail, right? One of the wrestlers. And security's right next to him looking at him. Like if they swarmed him. They took him out, right? They took him out, and they're grabbing on them, pulling, and the fan is struggling, and somehow, some way, the mask comes off, you know, and then it's just Jericho. And he's laughing and cackling, you know, haha, what I did, and they just, you know, take him to the back, and then later on in that show, you can kind of maybe cut to a segment where he's in the back gloating about what he did and cut a promo. It just looks so bad, you know. This whole thing was dumb because, first of all, you have Guevara and Garcia doing this challenge, and the babyface promoter who loves to hug everyone so tightly, he announced, yeah, it's going to happen. Like, this babyface promoter is putting the babyface in such a bad situation. It just, the whole thing was a mess from the start.
Yeah. So, you know, with Ricky Starks, it's like two steps forward, one step back, one step forward, two steps back. Nope. I imagine he's going to get something good out of this. He already beat Jericho once. He'll probably beat him again.
I would hope so.
But just getting there was this was not good for Ricky Starks.
Mm-hmm.
So Renee was with Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. Gunn said he would not be ringside with Bowens and Castor here.
It's good. Good stuff.
So Renee is with Bryan Danielson and Takeshita. Takeshita's taped up in the back. And she's about to ask him about facing Roosh when someone shuts the door in whatever room that they were in and it locks from the outside. So they couldn't get out. And immediately Roosh's music starts playing. So I'm thinking like, oh, so was Danielson supposed to do the interview when Roosh was coming to the ring? Like, yeah. That was mighty quick. And so MJF comes down and he is limping to the ring, you know, selling his tough match with Takeshita. And he says, hey, Aubrey, you got to start the count, sister. And so she starts the count. And, you know, she's counting really slow because she doesn't like him and he's being mean to her, which makes her count even slower. It would have been great if she got to 9.5 and Danielson jumps in. But I think she only got to like 5 by the time Danielson got there. Yeah. So I don't know what the slow counting was for. So Danielson runs. He breaks through the door. I thought it was a nice touch that in order for him to break through this door, he had to use his like full body and he's selling injuries. So I thought that was a nice touch. And he gets to the ring and they start the match. So, probably, I don't know, what do you think? Roosh's best match by far in AEW, right?
Oh, 100%. That's kind of how it goes with Bryan Danielson, you know.
He's the master. Somebody wrote this in our Discord, which we are beta testing right now, gg@fightgamemedia.com, if you want to invite.
Discord?
I forgot who said it. It may have been, God, I can't remember. I apologize. But saying, you know, in such small time in AEW, like if you compare how many great matches he had in AEW versus how many great matches he had in WWF, it's close or whatever in such a short time because he gets to wrestle like these long matches on TV a lot. And it's just so great. Like the idea that, what was it, like 4 years ago, this dude got cleared to come back or whatever. Mm-hmm. I forget what WrestleMania it was. And, you know, we thought he was done, right? Like we thought we were never going to see a Bryan Danielson or Daniel Bryan match ever again because he had to retire. And now he's just having fantastic wrestling matches. He's the master. You know, Okada, fantastic. Omega, when he is New Japan Kenny, awesome. You know, I know Ospreay is, but, you know, for me, if it's a random one match, it's Danielson. Maybe if it's a New Japan title match, I'd go Okada. But man, very few people I'd rather watch wrestle than Bryan Danielson.
He knows everyone's strengths and knows how to feature him, you know, and bring him out in the match. And he's the best. He's the best. And yeah, this was definitely Roosh's best match in the company. And Roosh, you know, to me, he should be a main event player.
Mm-hmm.
He has all that charisma, all that fire. Like when he's beating on people, he looks like, God, man, he looks crazy. He looks wild, right? Like very few guys have that in this day and age. And he's been beat so many times. Though they say he's never been, this would be his first loss in AEW. Nuh-uh. He lost many times in AEW already. So I don't know why they said
maybe
that.
Maybe they meant in 2023.
I think so, but yeah, he is undefeated in 2023, but we've only seen on his first match, Moxley's beat him a couple times, right? I just think he should be a bigger star, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought this match was really good. There's some stuff I mean, the stopping, the little chop battles, like in the middle, I just kind of, I wish they would kind of cut those down, you know? But, I can't complain too much about this match. I really enjoyed it. And I couldn't tell if Brian Hardway or blade himself. It looked like a hard way because the way the placement of the cut was right in the middle, like from, you know, in the middle of his forehead. So, or, you know, to the middle left of his forehead, if you're looking at him. You would think if you're going to cut yourself, you're cutting your hairline, mm-hmm. you know? So I don't know where that happened. Maybe when he was rushed, was running him into the guardrail, maybe he clipped something. That's I think. I don't know. I couldn't tell. There was a moment where he was down on all fours and looked like he could be doing it there, but I couldn't tell this time around.
Yeah, he's wearing the crimson mask. Roosh goes for the bull's horn, which he used to beat Christopher Daniels on Rampage. Danielson hits the knee. He comes flying out of the corner with the knee. Mm-hmm. They do a headbutt spot, and then another flying knee. Danielson wins. So Danielson versus MJF is set now for Revolution. And, you know, because no one else could get the job done, MJF comes down to the ring and puts Danielson in his salt of the earth to try to further injure that shoulder for the match. But now that MJF was selling knee, do you think that's going to have an effect in the match?
Yeah, I think they're both going to go in a match. Not 100%. The more I think about it, the more I don't want this Iron Man stipulation. I think it's going to just take, I don't know. You know, I shouldn't say that because Brian's a genius and MJF's very good. So I'm sure they'll have a great match, but I wish it was just one fall. Because I think they could really tell a great story just with the one fall.
Yeah. Okay. So that was, to me, by far the best match on the show. Actually, you know what? The opener, depending on the kind of match that you enjoy, I'm such a Danielson fan, but those two are probably the two best matches. Mm-hmm. Tony Schiavone with the Impractical Jokers. I don't even know what this was. I've seen those guys live before.
They're me too. I think we've probably been in the same show. Maybe. At the auditorium. I think just promoting the season premiere, their new season. You know, it's a big hit show on those networks. So,
They said Jericho was a diva and they stole Floyd the Bat. Top Flight and AR Fox versus the Elite in the John LaRocca Invitational this week. I mean, craziness. Crazy moves, athletic moves, like AR Fox and Omega are so athletic. Matt Jackson is crazy athletic. So if that's your style, you probably really, really like this. You know, I was thinking, because I watched the Elite versus Matt Hardy and Ethan Page and Cassidy.
That match.
And I wasn't as bothered with that match as I was bothered with some of those best of seven matches. And I realized the reason is because when that match opened, I was like, oh, it's just going to be a goofy match. And it was a goofy match. And mm-hmm. and so my expectations weren't like up here for it. Right. But in those best of seven matches, my expectation was here. And I wanted to see like a serious fight for this title. And we got a bunch of goofy matches. So I think it's expectation for me with the Elite. And it's just hard to watch Kenny after we watched him with Will Ospreay. Like, that's kind of, I think, what my thing is as well. Is like, I just saw this guy have one of the greatest matches. And then he comes in here and he fights with a hammer. It's just like,
I gotta ask Paul Fontaine to send me the breakdown of that Rampage Hour, because it did a really poor rating, you know, and I thought maybe it'd be a little better with the lead on it, but I don't know where they were when they started and where they ended, you know, like that's could have been a huge drop after the lead was matches on. But this match here is, you know, we know what it is, right? We know what we're going to get. It made me really miss Randy Orton, because when he does the RKO, it just means something, not like do it 25 times in a match.
Yeah.
And then, you know, AR Fox, he's indestructible. You can get hit with a million moves, take him, hit with a million moves, and he gets rolled up. You know.
Yeah. He had a cradle, then Omega just reversed the cradle.
That's all he needed to do. They should have messed around with all this crap first. They could just did cradles. I don't know.
So. His next match, he should be like, screw this crazy, insane dive. I'm just going to go straight for the cradle. Like,
so what's their match for the pay-per-view? We got, I don't know. We got what, 3 weeks left?
unless we get to Malakai and his group, House of Black.
I kind of wish they would have saved this match for the pay-per-view. Like, let's get the kids, especially Top Flight, a pay-per-view match, right? I think that would be nice, but...
Yeah, it'll be 3 weeks this weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. I would have done this match on the pay-per-view at least. You know, that'd been an
opener.
Been fun. Yeah, opener. I'm curious to see how the ratings on go, how the flow goes with this one. Because, you know, I would think people would want to stay for the main event because the Acclaim are a very popular group, but we'll see.
Hook video package, and then quickly Lexi with Stoke, and Stoke was mad. Hook's beating all his guys. And he said, even Cassidy was moaning like Lil' Kim because of Hook. And then Hook came in and he just hooked him, hooked his arm, put him in a submission. And Lexi was like so worried. She's like, what are you doing, dude? Like, this is a little guy. You're putting this submission on him. And she was very worried for Stokely after Hook left. So that was it. He didn't say anything about Jungle Boy.
Not that worried. She didn't get medical right away. He had a screen for Stokely had a screen for medical. So, I mean, after Stokely's speech, it's like he beat all my guys. So now, why do we want to continue to see this continue? Who's, you know, I guess Ethan Page is the only guy he hasn't really beat yet. So I guess they're building to that. Probably going to be at the Capel show. Oh yeah, Chase Center pay per view show. Probably on the 0 hour. I'm guessing.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I know. Even us, we want to see Jungle Boy as a single, but dang, they were a fun little tag team.
Yeah, but we already did that. It was funny. I was listening to our good friends, The Boom, right? Jay McDaniel, Kevin Ely, what up, guys? Mm-hmm. And they mentioned, like, and I totally forgot about this guy. Christian Cage might be coming back soon, right?
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, like, oh, shit, I totally forgot about him.
They did a good job of making us forget about him too.
Yeah, as I'm saying, it's like, probably not a good thing that we forgot about this guy. But luckily, we got the AEW experts over. You know, they're keeping me updated on everything AEW for all the Boom, and I was like, but do I want to? I mean, I guess we want to see that end. So I think that needs to end eventually. You know, got to put that ending to it. But I don't want to see no more Luchasaurus, man. Let's hope. Let's hope he's gone. But I don't think so. But.
All right. I don't think this Rampage is going to do very well either unless they add more matches, which they said they would announce on social media. But it is the Bullet Club, the Blackpool Combat Club versus Kip Sabian and the Butcher and the Blade. Jungle Boy is going to have a match. Ruby Soho versus Marina Shafir. Marina Shafir is going to be in that Bloodsport show. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, she's worked one. Did she work one before? I think she did.
Yeah. But earlier, like right after WWE, I think, right?
Yeah.
Mark Briscoe interview, and then on Dynamite, nothing. Everything's going to be announced on Rampage. Main event, the Acclaimed versus the Gunn Brothers. Max did a bunch of political stuff for his speech, but then he said, in Spanish, he basically said that the Gunn Brothers had small nuts. So match is going, and then the all this stuff happens when Bowens does like a tornado punch, and the referee, what is his name, Stefan or Stefan?
Stefan Smith.
Stefan.
Yeah.
Gets punched, and he's got to get punched from the middle of the ring and figure out a way to fall all the way outside the ring for it, because that's where he's going to lay.
It was an awesome. It was an awesome bump. He did a great job.
It was a good job. Man, he's got to run a far way to fall.
Stumbled back like he's rocked, and he took a great backwards, bump out of the ring, going to the second. It was just perfect. I thought that was freaking awesome. It was that Bryce Rensburg. He would have done a bunch of spins, and oh my god, it held his heart and cried for mommy and did this big dramatic thing, but you know, like we got a professional in there, thank goodness.
So referee's out, and this allows our heels, some real heels here on this show, the Gunn Brothers.
Yeah, they're great.
Austin grabs the belt and he's about to hit Bowens, who is knocked out. And Billy Gunn comes in. Now he said he wasn't going to be in this match. comes in and it kind of looks like he's going to pick Bowens up to get hit with the belt. But mm-hmm. then Austin is coming with the belt. Billy drops Bowens and he stops Austin from doing it. And then Colton comes in and he hits his pops with the belt. So Billy is outside and he's knocked out. So Bay Faces get the mic drop on Austin, but there's still no referee. Max goes outside to get the ref. Colton gets the ref, throws the ref in the ring, but the referee is still like woozy. Like he didn't just immediately come back to life. Like he was still out of it.
Yeah.
So the counts are slow. So Colton pulls Bowen out of the ring on a slow two count after the mic drop. So then Bowen gets an let's see. There was another two count that the ref was slow on that they kicked out of. Then Bowen comes towards the ropes. Colton still has the belt, blasts him in the face, goes back, gets rolled up. 1, 2, 3. Gun Brothers are the new champions. The only thing I wrote was, man, Max must have died, because the way that he gets knocked out is he gets pushed his back into the rail, and he had to sit out there for quite a long time. That was my only flaw with this whole little segment. But, man, the heels win. They're the new champs. They're calling out the top guys on Twitter. We don't know what's going on with those guys, but yeah, I liked it. I mean, we've been saying that, you know, it'd be nice to get a title change here, and maybe they run it back at the pay-per-view and mm-hmm. you know, they could always get their belts back, but I wanted to see it, and I'm glad we did.
Yeah, Acclaim, you know, they're super over. They don't need the belts right now. You know, losing it's not going to hurt them at all. Continues their program. I thought this was a good match. I thought I'm not a fan of. I'm okay with ref bumps. I'm just not a fan of the groggy referee, right? Because to me, it's just not believable, right? I think you should always have another referee come out and check mm-hmm. on the fallen referee, and then he kind of gets pulled into the match, right? I prefer actually two referees: one to go check on the fallen referee, and one to go in the match to finish the officiating. It would have been cool if they would have done something where they did that. Two referees come out, one gets in the ring, one referee is, you know, helping Stefan out, back turned to the action, not even paying out. He's just concerned about Stefan. You could have had a second ref bump with the new ref. You know, you could have had like mic drop, boom, here comes the two refs. Like, it has to be kind of quick. The bump by Stefan. Klang gets the advantage for a bit, hits their, sets up for their move, the mic drop, boom, mic drop. And you kind of time it, the referee's running down, slides in, 1, 2, kick out. I would have cut out the second near fall with the guns, Klang getting on the guns. And then you do another ref bump. And then soon after, you had the third referee that's out there checking on Stefan. He comes in and he counts the fall after the crime was committed by the guns. I think that would have been just, but it has to be boom, boom, boom. It can't be like, can't take too long with it. But yeah, I'm happy with this. I love those kids. I'm a big guns fan. I was thinking MGF kind of needs someone, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of just out there by himself. And, you know, I think the guns and him would be great. That's a nice little six-man group.
Three young dudes with titles.
And, God, they would – can you imagine the cocky and arrogant Austin Gunn and Colton Gunn, too, with MJF? And I think that would be a slick group. And, I don't know, maybe add a female manager or someone really good. I don't know who's out there that's good, but, like, you know, something like that. I don't know. Like, just – MJF, I feel like – maybe I'm just – because I grew up on Ric Flair and the Horsemen. Maybe I just mm-hmm. always feel like he needs someone or a bodyguard, some big dude as well in a suit, like Big Bubba, something like that to add to the package. But yeah, that was cool. Good ending. And I like that match, like those kids. So,
all right. Next, we'll throw to the 45-minute interview that I did. It's actually a 70-minute. I chopped some stuff out to tighten it for this show. But I'll link to the full interview in our show notes if you want to listen, because there's some stuff in there about Baby Huey and Cody Rhodes. They had a little fun relationship from the Stardust days. And he even talks about you in that part, which you can find on the YouTube version. But this is a solid 45. You know, he's a radio vet. He knows the ins and outs of the business, and I nerd out on the radio stuff, so it was a lot of fun to talk about. And he's interviewed so many people in wrestling, and he gets the WWE guys, which is not everyone gets those guys. So check out Baby Huey. John and I will come back after the interview to shut down the show. Let's give you the proper introduction here, because Bay Area folks in San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland, they know you from the radio, but you also do a podcast, which we're going to get into in a second. And that fascinates me, because you hit me up after I talked to my buddy Ben Cruz, who worked for The Ringer, and Ben also started in radio, and now he's working for a podcast company. So all three of us kind of have that in common. But give me, you said 18 years, like, give me your start. What is your origin story of working in radio?
Yeah, well, no, thanks again for having me on. So, yeah, the origin of Baby Huey goes back, let's see, summer 2004. So I was transferring from Laney College in Oakland to UC Berkeley, and I was pursuing my mass communications degree. And during that summer, in between, I wanted to get an internship at a radio station. And I can say it now because they're no longer around. It was Live 105. I applied to be on their action team, the promotion team. Went through the whole interview process, everything. I did not get hired.
Wow.
I was so crushed. Like, the radio station I grew up loving, Green Day's multi-favorite band, Nirvana, all like the grunge and punk and rock bands, alternative rock bands I grew up loving. I was exposed through Live 105.
Did they also have Stern?
Yeah. So at that point, yeah, Stern was syndicated through them. But I grew up with Alex Bennett
right.
in the morning through my parents and stuff. So I was super excited to apply and have the job interview process. Did not get hired. I was crushed. I was like, where am I going to work? Like, like, there's no other station in the market that I like. I was so heartbroken. But instead, I started working at Calax, 90.7 KALX, okay. Cal Berkeley's college radio station. Started doing that, going on the air, production, learning everything, all the different departments, building up my resume. Then the following summer, August 2005, I applied for a job at 107.7 The Bone, because by that point, they were around for about couple years at that point, existence. And they were playing classic rock and all the bands that I also grew up loving, that my Aunt Katie, introduced me to, all these different bands.
I'm going to get a little Bay Area radio nerdy here. 107.7 previously was KSOL.
Oh, yeah.
And that was more of like a hip hop R&B kind of station.
And then remember, for a while, it was Wild 107.7.
Wild 107, yeah.
And then they did the switch.
Wild 94.9.
Yeah, exactly. So I applied the following summer to 107.7 The Bone, and my resume was just that much more fuller, and just having all that experience college radio, it showed I was interested. I want to pursue this as a career. Went through the interview process, boom, got hired, and started in the promotions department. While I started as a promotions intern, I used to go like, the rule was don't go into the studio till after 10 a.m. when Lamont and Tonelli were on the air. But I would just go in there at 9:45 and grab prize sheets and start small talk with them and everything, and just start being friendly with them. And then we just got the Niners that season on our stations, the broadcasting rights. And we had a big party down at Justin Herman Plaza, the Ferry Building. Alex Smith just got drafted, all that stuff. It was a big, to do. And while I was there, I introduced, myself to everyone there more and got more friendly. And I, told them I would love to do more with the morning show. And, I started interning with them by December 2005. And so I eventually switched over to the programming department. And then over time, snowball effect, after a couple of years, finally got full time with the morning show. So that was the quick, rundown of getting started with 107.7 The Bone.
So the interesting thing is, for me, is that your story and my story are completely flipped around.
Okay.
And So I go to KMBR and I want to be an intern, and I give my resume, and Pat Olson is the guy, the I forget whatever his title was, program director, whatever it was, Pat Olson of KMBR. And I walk in and I'm like, here's my thing. And, you know, there's like six or seven dudes who want this internship. And stupidly, I didn't have a plan B. I didn't have a backup. And I think that they only hired one or two people. I want to say it was one, but it's possible that it was two. And then he's like asking me, why do I want it? You know, what am I, all the normal questions. And so I'm like confident on the outside, but I'm petrified on the inside, because if I don't get this internship, then I'm a semester behind in possible graduation. And it just I don't know why he hired me, but it lucked out, and I got it, and you know, I was able to do that. But it's like so different from yours in that, you know, here you were, you're like putting stuff on your resume, and I was like, oh yeah, I just want this because I just want to be in radio. It's just like so stupid, right? It's like if somebody asked me how would you go into this, I would say, okay, you know, have a few stations, have a backup plan, you know, make sure that people know you and know you're interested in doing this. And then, you know, I just lucked out. So dumb. But okay, don't for people who are like, isn't this a wrestling podcast? We're gonna get there in a second. But I just want to set up Baby Huey's and just kind of. The idea that, you know, you're a rookie essentially, and you're like, oh, I'm just going to go shoot the stuff with these guys. And Lamont Tonelli, they've been together for over 20 years right now. But this is before, you know, that this is back before then. And you're just like wide eyed, bushy tailed, like, hey, what's up, guys? And they're probably like, who's this kid, man? What's going like? What was that early interaction like?
It was God, I can remember it in my head still, like walking into the studio, like it was just such a rush to go into the air studio and into a room where these guys are having fun and entertaining the entire Bay Area. To me, it was such like a powerful tool. And, you know, as a kid growing up in the 80s and 90s, radio was everything for me. Like, yeah. You know, for anyone younger than me, maybe doesn't understand that, like, growing up, it was like MTV, the radio, a record store, magazines, like that was your pop culture exposure. So radio was everything to me. So to be in the room and see where the magic is done, it was such a rush. And it was like, oh my God, just the adrenaline, everything. And but yeah, going in there, I would just like small talk. Hey, how's it going, guys? How's it going? Like, it was Mondays were my office day. So I would go in there every Monday. Come in. I used to be all like button collar shirt and everything and be all proper. Go in there and say, hi, how's it going? I remember the first time I really talked to Tonelli at that Niner event. He says, oh, yeah, I've seen you around. And then, you know, Lamont was always, hey, how's it going? And Sully, who used to be on the show at the time, you know, made friends with him. But I just made a point to go introduce myself to everyone and just show that I was interested helping out. What really set me on course with them was, so within the first couple months of my starting there, they had a big golf tournament, and they were known for their legendary golf tournaments. And I was working there at the golf tournament, you know, helping out set up. And I was super excited because, like, there was like Hooter girls there. And I was like, oh my God, I want to be on the Hooter girls hole, because that's where they're pouring beer and that looks like it's going to be fun. Instead, they put me way out in the middle of nowhere in the sun, and I had to be the eyewitness for the hole in one.
Yeah.
So if you got a hole in one, you want a Camaro, I believe, or some car there. So I literally just sit there and just watch everyone tee off and watch if it's a hole in one or not. I'm getting sunburned. It's pain. Finally, they're like, okay, Danny, go ahead, go to this hole. And I knew it was the Hooter girls hole. I sprinted over there. By the time I got over there, the girls were gone. I just had to help clean up. I was so pissed. I was like, damn it. So I'm like cleaning up everything. And this guy comes up to me in this foursome. And he's like, hey, you work at the radio station? I was like, yeah, I'm new. And he's like, you know Lamont Antonelli? I was like, yeah, I'm new. I see him around the halls and stuff. I heard they're a-holes. Is that true? And I said, no, I mean, that was cool with me. But he kept like digging at me, asking, me trying to give dirt. And I'm like, I'm not talking ass. Like, no, they're fine with me. They're really nice. And he said, I'm messing with you. I'm Lamont's brother-in-law.
Oh, wow. He's testing you.
Yeah. And then Lamont comes walking right after laughing. I said, heard my brother-in-law was testing you. I'm glad you didn't talk ass about me behind my back. I could trust you. I'm like, yeah. And I said, well, hey, if you ever need help with anything, I'd love to help out. And he says, well, we got to give you a nickname. You know, we can't call you, you know, Danny on the air. We got to give you something fun. I said, well, in high school, it's called Lurch because I was the tallest white guy on the basketball team. He's like, nah, you know, that's maybe something different. I said, well, when I was younger, my Aunt Katie used to call me Baby Huey because I remind her of the old cartoon. He's like, perfect. Like Howard Stern has Baba Booey, Baby Huey, rolls off the tongue.
Right.
Boom. Been stuck with that now for the last 18 years. So, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So that's how it, and then I started helping out with them and I came in for help out with stunts and stuff. And so, like I said, snowballed from there.
So paying your dues is a big deal in radio. Like to be sort of the last, you know, the last person in and the newest person, like that person has to pay their dues, just like any position. Like, you know, in wrestling, you always hear that got to pay your dues.
Yep.
And in radio, it's very much the same because radio has a long history of people working at the station for a long time, or you're an act that has been together for a long time and you're just hopping over to new markets. So longevity is a big thing. And so that is very interesting. The wrestling fandom, how does your wrestling fandom fit with the radio gig? Like, are you hiding it or are you flaunting it? Like, because, you know, the first thing someone is good, if they know that you like wrestling, they're going to go like, but it's fake. Like, why do you like something? Right. That's going to be the first thing. So how did that fit with the folks at the radio station?
So what happened was, you know, working at the local radio station, whenever WWE comes to town, they want to do local press to promote a Raw, SmackDown, a house show, whatever, promoting their event and just get, you know, last minute ticket sales. I mean, usually they'll do a ticket giveaway or when tickets go on sale, to run commercials, all that stuff a couple months out. And then, you know, maybe the week of another ticket giveaway and last minute commercials, just try to sell as many tickets as they can. So I remember I found out that Batista was coming in studio.
Wow.
And keep in mind, this is what, 2005. So, you know,
he's giant.
Prime Batista. And so I heard he was coming. I was like, what? And I saw in the office a photo of Rey Mysterio. And I guess that was taken from the year before when he was in studio. So our station was known for just getting the wrestlers, superstars coming in studio whenever they were in town. So when I heard Batista was in, I was like, I want to go up there and meet him. So I forgot who I asked for permission, whatever. So I went up there, got to meet him, got to take a photo with him. And so, like, I have the photo still. I mean, I'm in my office wear at the time, and I'm smiling, you know, with Batista, you know, heavyweight champion. And that was awesome. So that's when they kind of everyone started knowing that I love wrestling. And, you know, just office talk, you know, some coworkers love wrestling as well, some don't. And that becomes like a backstage office conversation as well. And, you know, just defending wrestling's honor whenever I can.
Yeah.
And then, just over time, whenever WWE came to town and they would ask us, you know, sales department, whoever, be like, hey, WWE's doing a buy or the venue's doing a buy for commercials. Do you want, you know, an interview with so-and-so? And I would say, yes, we want it. We want the interview. And so, you know, one time Kofi Kingston came in, Sheamus came in.
Yeah.
I have like so many, photos of guys coming in studio over the years. I talked to John Cena on the phone once, you know, like, because I was like call screening. So I would talk and talk to John Cena, put him on hold.
Yeah.
CM Punk, Jericho. So it's just either in studio or phoners, just wherever I can. So just over time, people realize how much I love wrestling. And then, you know, WWE would hook it up with tickets to the show. So it's just, that's where it kind of initially all started. It was just them coming in studio and whatnot.
Our Bay Area homegirl, Bailey, my San Jose homegirl, I think she went to Independence High School, which is on the east side. I went to high school on the east side as well, Mount Pleasant. If she comes into town to promote Monday Night Raw or mm-hmm. maybe San Jose or the Bay Area has a pay-per-view. Is she going with you guys because she's local? Like, have you ever got to do stuff with her?
Oh, yeah. So I'm trying to think. We've talked to her a few times. On the morning show, talked to her on the phone. I recorded a separate phone interview with her once. And then when I first met her in person, I mean, this is outside when I saw her years ago at BTW when she first started. I've seen her back in the day. But as Bailey, the first time I met her, I went to the Aftershock Festival, big music festival in Sacramento. And at the time, NXT was doing wrestling matches there. So for a while, NXT would have running NXT like house shows at a music festival.
Yeah.
I remember like was it Corey Taylor and Baron Corbin got into it once at a festival, and that led to an angle on TV. So I went to Sacramento and like I was excited for like all the bands, but the fact NXT was there, I was like, oh my God. So I remember that day I got to interview Bailey, Enzo and Cass, Finn Balor. Let's see, Samoa Joe was there. I didn't get to interview him, but I did go say hi. Let's see, who else did I talk to? So that was my first time meeting Bailey in person. And I told Bailey, hey, I'm from the Bay Area. I know you're from the Bay Area. She's like, oh yeah, I remember the Bone, you know, cause by that point she, you know, already moved to Florida. Yeah. Was getting her career going. But yeah, so that's how we initially, met each other. Jump ahead. Last March, I saw her at a BTW show. It was a memorial show for Kirk White, big time wrestling. Yeah, he was the owner who sadly passed away. They had a memorial show, and she was actually there because she, you know, as we know, she was injured, and you know, she's from here. She was staying back here in the Bay Area, so just a little nice coincidence. She was able to attend this show in his honor, and so I just went up to her and said, "Hey, I don't know if you remember me," and I introduced myself. She's like, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah," and so we made small talk, and then you know, we started following each other, or she started following me on social media and stuff, and you know, we did another video interview last year promoting a Bay Area show, and then I went to her toy drive, and so you know, we've been kind of, friendly, professionally friendly with each other and stuff. So no, it's been cool to kind of get to know her on a more little personal basis.
But I mean, you kind of, I don't know if it was a humble brag or if you glossed over that part like really quickly, but Bailey follows you on social media. That's kind of a cool thing, right?
Yeah, no, I try to keep it, not oversell it, but yes, it's pretty awesome. Like, it's cool when Bailey, Drew McIntyre, Jericho, like all these different wrestlers who I've interviewed at one point or another start following me, and I'm like, I'm like 10-year-old kid again. Like, oh my God, this is awesome. But I try to be cool. I'm like, gotta be professional. And like, yeah, man, keep it cool. But no, but deep down, like, this is awesome. Like, this is so cool. Like, if you would have told me as a little kid watching, you know, the 80s and, you know, the new generation and Attitude Era, that eventually one day I would build like some sort of professional relationship with these mm-hmm. wrestlers, all that hard work and sacrifice and hustle was all worth it.
So what? Where does the wrestling fandom come in? Like, how old were you when you first started getting into it?
Oh my God, six, 7 years old. I remember. So growing up I was born in 83. So when I was like six, seven, like kind of old enough to kind of start processing, remembering what's on TV. Obviously WWF. I mean, I was a fan of Ultimate Warrior. My brother Tommy loved Hulk Hogan. So, you know, WrestleMania Battle. 6. Yeah. So I remember, like, I loved the Bushwhackers as a kid. I don't know why. I mean,
every kid loved the Bushwhackers.
Yeah. I mean, like, all the 80s. And, you know, growing up here, as you know, on the West Coast, like, WWF is what I was exposed to. And then, like, by early 90s, you know, when we finally got cable in our house, I was able to watch TBS and start watching WCW. And then, you know, just from there, you know, once I hit, like, middle school and high school, you know, the Attitude Era was off and running, just being able to watch Raw and Nitro. Luckily, on our old cable plan, we got Nitro East Coast time. So I could watch Nitro first and then just watch Raw after. So I didn't have to like channels flip back and forth. It was like 5 hours of wrestling every Monday that I could tune in for and do my homework while watching.
So you have a podcast called In the Click and you you have that podcast at the same time while working in radio. Is there any like headbutting when it comes to that? Because you know, radio is radio, and this is how you do business. And you sell ads, and there's commercials, and we run a show, and podcasting is like sort of this long form interview stuff, which, you know, it wouldn't work on a morning radio show. Like, is how does that work out for you, the podcasting versus radio thing?
Okay, so I'm trying to think how I can sum all this up. It's been a journey, I could say. So, you know, after being at the station for so many years, I realized I was at a point where I wanted to have more of my own body of work.
Mm-hmm.
Content, create my own content. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm forever grateful to Lamont and Tonelli for everything they've done for me, to be under their wing. The job security with them has been nothing but amazing. They've taken care of me so well over the years. But I know that's not going to last forever.
Sure.
And so I don't want to be a day where, you know, it's eventually gone and not have a backup plan or have something of my own that I could present, you know, for future jobs or whatever the case may be. That's mentally where I was at. And so I really wanted to start branching out and being a little more independent and creating my own content. And I was like, what can I do? And, you know, keep in mind, about 10 years ago, I want to say roughly, give or take a few years, you know, podcasting started taking off. I mean, mm-hmm. podcasting, you know, it was very in its infant stage, and not a lot of people knew what it was or how to do it correctly. And I didn't know as well. I remember it was at a certain point where, you know, we get a lot of guests offered to us.
Sure.
And not everyone we agree to do the interview with, just because for various reasons, either like the date and time doesn't work. Maybe the hosts don't know who they are, you know, and or whatever the reason may be, they just can't do it. Eventually, there was a point where it's like, I know who this person is. Mm-hmm. I could do an interview with them. I mean, if this person is being offered, I'll do the interview. I always like would ask L&T first, you want to talk to this person? Like, nah, we don't want to talk to them. I was like, okay, I will talk to them. So eventually I got to a point where it's like, okay, if there's any leftover interviews or interviews that's available that no one else wants to do, I'll start doing it.
And this sounds a little callous, but
uh-huh.
radio time is very valuable when you're doing yes. a morning show. It's about ratings. You don't want people to change that channel. So to Lamont and Tonelli, if they go, I'm not sure that person is going to connect with the audience, I'm not sure mm-hmm. we can do a good 5 minutes, we don't want people changing the channel, that's why they would say no. Not because they're just like big timing people. It's about ratings and radio.
Correct.
You're measured, you know, by the minute to hold listeners.
Absolutely. So, and then, you know, I started seeing at the time in radio, a lot more stations around the country start doing podcasting in various forms, like, you know, a morning show might do an extra bonus, you know, segment that will put out as MP3 for their listeners, or extra interviews, or other members of the show outside of the main host would do like a specialty show. So I saw like this podcast world take off in the radio sense. I was like, I kind of want to do that too. So I started doing a podcast with some coworkers of mine. We called The Other Guys. And it was just because we were the other guys, not the big name hosts on the stage. And we're like the young upcoming guys.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. We would just mess around.
Kind of like what Stern does with the after show, right?
Exactly. I mean, oh yeah, absolutely. The after show was like a big inspiration. I mean,
yeah.
I grew up loving Howard Stern. So a lot of stuff he would do, I saw a lot of people kind of copy that in some capacity. So I started wanting to do, like, with that, I want to start doing interviews. And so, yeah, I started doing, you know, band interviews and wrestling interviews. And it became a point where, like, certain wrestlers would be available and maybe other people couldn't do it. And I was like, I'll do the interview. So I started just recording interviews. And I've already had kind of connections with WWE's PR team when they would come in studio and making connections with them. But what really set it off was WrestleMania 31 was in the Bay Area at Santa Clara at Levi Stadium. They had what's called Radio Row, and they had different media outlets set up there doing interviews all morning. And I was asked if I wanted to participate. And I was like, hell yeah. So I brought my equipment, set up, and started doing interviews there. And I do want to shout out, I did a lot of wrestling interviews at the time with my old podcast co-host, James Kincaid, aka Bimbo Jimbo.
Yep.
James Kincaid, a lot of people might know him. He's the main commentator for West Coast Pro Wrestling out here in the Bay Area. Did some stuff with All Pro Wrestling, works for the United Wrestling Network in LA. He now does stuff with Circle Six as well. He's one of my best friends. So when I started getting offers to do wrestling interviews, he was my buddy from KNBR. He worked at KNBR. And so
I didn't know he worked at KNBR.
Oh, that's, yeah. That's
interesting. We have traded DMs back and forth before, but
okay.
KNBR piece, you know what? Maybe he did tell me KNBR. I'm trying to remember, but no, that's fascinating. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was a producer at KNBR, and he also was inspired to be on the air, as now he's following his dream of doing commentary for wrestling. So we shared this passion for wrestling, and when I started getting wrestling interviews, and so he joined me on the other guy's podcast, mm-hmm. and that's how we kind of developed our chemistry with each other. And then eventually it was like, hey, I'm going to do this interview. You want to do it with me? He's like, yeah, sure. So we would start doing these wrestling interviews together, and, you know, I would put them on the website, podcast them out. Eventually we were at the point where it was like, we should do a podcast together, mm-hmm. like not just interviews only, like let's do an actual weekly podcast where we talk about the wrestling highlights and news and stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's when we started In the Click. And that was the summer 2018. I remember it was SummerSlam 2018 was our first like episode, our first review. And so, yeah, we started doing that together. So we do interviews and then the weekly podcast. And that's how it just kind of started. And we started doing that for a couple years together. I was going to say, so WrestleMania, we went down there and we did all these interviews together. It was awesome. It was like the first time on my own with Jimbo,
yeah,
like branching off and doing my own thing. And it was like it was nice not to be like, not to like humble brag, but like to be in the guy, like the producer, the guy in the background, to be now like sure. one of the hosts doing all these interviews. And like,
but here's the smart thing. And I'm going to tell people what the smart thing is Baby Huey. He knows how to record the stuff, so he doesn't need to bring a producer. He doesn't need anybody. Like, he's got his recorder. So that's why they're going to ask you to do it, is because they know that you're going to do it by yourself, and they don't need to ask anyone to, like, he's going to do it. He's going to do it right. And then he's going to put it up. He, we're going to let him do something that's going to be fun for him. But at the same time, it's not like it costs them much to send you out there. It's like, oh, he's going to do the content. We don't need to send anybody else. He knows how to do this stuff. That is the media lesson, though, when it comes to this stuff, because anybody who knows, you know, when I was growing up in journalism, it was starting to be like this, which is you're lucky if you had someone to help you with lighting. You're lucky if you had someone to help you shoot the thing. And so you had to sort of be this quasi, just utility person with everything. Yes. So to be able to send you out there, they knew that, you know, okay, he's going to do everything because he doesn't need us. And that's what makes you valuable in that moment.
Absolutely. And that's like, you know, for anyone who wants to hit me up for questions or advice, I am totally down to help out. I always love paying it forward. But yes, number one rule, invest in yourself, but more specifically, invest in your own equipment. Have it so you'll be on call, ready to go. Like, you know, for the video viewers right now, I got my Zoom H6. I bought this literally a couple weeks before WrestleMania 31, did all my interviews on this, and I've done all my interviews remotely to this day with this. Every WrestleMania, music festival, even in the background here in my home office, I got my little tripod and iPhone holder that's how I did my interviews in Dallas last year at WrestleMania on that thing. So, like I said, invest in yourself and equipment. So that WrestleMania 31, did all these interviews, and that was the beginning of like WWE knew, like they saw me doing all those interviews that morning, so they knew like they could trust me and that I will do a good job, or you know, to me, a good job of doing these interviews, and you know, be professional and ask the right questions.
Yeah,
and,
you're not gonna ask whomever they would have given you at that point. I don't even know, but you're not going to ask
Charlotte. Charlotte was NXT champion at the time. Just lost it, I believe. Yeah, yeah.
You're not going to ask them dumb questions. You're not going to ask them about, when you throw a punch and you slap your leg at the same time. Like, you're not going to do that. So they know your body of work, and they know you're going to ask smart questions. And
yeah.
And so they'll just make people available for you.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like I said, the very first time WWE asked me to do an interview on site was, I was telling you this the other day, was that summer 2014 where they were announcing WrestleMania coming the following year.
Yeah.
They had a house show at the SAP Center in San Jose. And it was like a summer tour or something, but Ric Flair and Big E were available to do interviews. And they're like, you want to record? I was like, hell yeah. But I was scrambling for equipment. And luckily at the time, our engineer gave me a microphone that could plug into my old iPhone at the time and gave me a program. So I recorded these interviews with Ric Flair and Big E, my first interviews ever on my own, on my old iPhone. And my brother, I love my brother Tommy, he's always been my biggest support, helping me out. He was filming on his iPhone the video, and then, you know, we edit it later. And so, but then that's why, jump ahead a few months later when WrestleMania came through, I made sure to buy the proper equipment, get ready for that season. And then ever since then, I have my own equipment. I'm on the go, mobile whenever needed. So, so ever since then, just be doing, you know, interviews wherever I can. And just, I love it. I love doing all that stuff.
You know, to kind of give an example, the people who are listening to this, Brian Alvarez, you know, runs this website. And when I first started helping out Dave, they sent me on, I think they sent Dave and I to Los Angeles. We were, there was a New Japan show that was going to be on Access TV. And, you know, right where that LA, where the Staples is, that they had an office there. So they sent us out there. And I'm supposed to help record this interview with Kazuchika Okada. And I don't really have any equipment. I have a recorder, not as good as the one that you had, but I didn't know the whole mic input thing. I'm like, I'll just throw this thing in the middle and it'll just pick up. And so, you know, I put those interviews up and Brian's like, okay, it's fine, but I'm going to send you something better. So he sent me something similar like yours. And okay, now I'm going to send you mics and then send the mic plugs. And okay, now, you know, this is going to get the level of sound that the website, you know, that I can do. So that was also a learning experience because I was like, oh man, I kind of feel not really prepared now that I see what I needed to do. And then quickly, you got to learn how to use that equipment. You got to learn how to, you know, how to mix it correctly, you know. And so it's, you know, there was some learning experience for me too. Even I was only doing it sort of, you know, as a passion to help Dave, but very quickly I figured out, you know, okay, this the way that I'm doing it is not great.
Well, the other thing too, keep in mind, like perception is reality. Like if you're going to interview a wrestler or whoever, you want to be courteous of their time, but as best you can, look professional, look the part. You know, I see it like this, the trend now on social media, like people with these little microphones and they're talking to people. And it's like, to me, I'm like, pulling my hair out. It's like, that looks bad. Like I'm so old school. Like I got like extra microphones in my office here. Like these are my microphones I take with me to WrestleMania. Like, these are high end microphones and cables and, you know, recorders. And so you want to look professional, like look like you're part of an actual like professional broadcaster. And so, you know, that way they feel like, you know, you're courteous to their time and they feel like they're, you know, doing a proper, you know, interview and not like, you know, some just random person who's like BSing or something. So that's my big thing is like, you know, look the part as well.
100%. It's funny cause I was going through my photos the other day and I was looking for we had interviewed Kota Ibushi at one point. And so I was like, where did we do that? And so I was kind of looking through my iPhoto app on my Mac, and I think you could search by location. Mm-hmm. And I was like, where was that? Was that in Vegas? And so I'm like kind of just looking up all my Vegas photos, and it's like, no, it's not there. And somehow I clicked on the Las Vegas photos, and I found the first time. So I don't know if you were there, but AEW in 2019, so February of 2019, they did what was their first ever pre-sale ticket party in Vegas. And it was like, it was in the middle of the week. So Dave, you know, I took one day off of work. Dave and I flew out there. we slept like 3 hours and then we flew back home and I missed like a half a day of work, I think.
Okay.
And so I'm looking through these photos and I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, we interviewed Kenny Omega that night. And so what happens is, and I don't, so again, I don't know if you've done this kind of thing, but they have, you know, they have these scrums for the reporters and for the content creators. And so Dave and I are there and we're walking and I'm like, oh, there's the media. And so I think I'm thinking like, okay, we're supposed to go hang out with the media there. And he's like, he doesn't even answer me, but I'm like starting to walk and he just starts walking the other way. And so I'm like, okay, he smells something. He knows what's going on. So I follow him. He just walks down where all the AEW wrestlers are as they're waiting for this ticket party to start. And, you know, you see him and, oh, hey, what's up, Dave? And Cody's there. Kenny's there. The Bucks are there. That at that time, I didn't even know what Tony Khan looked like. But he was there. That was the first time we ever interviewed Tony. And Tony was so nervous. He was sweating. He wouldn't look us in the eye. And I think it was because he was not able to really answer our questions, you know, like because he couldn't say anything because it would have been spoiling like a lot of their plans. They hadn't even started. This was their first show. They didn't even start the TV show yet. And so, you know, and so I don't know how familiar you are with these other media folks, but, you know, Ryan Satin's there and he's kind of bothered because, you know, he's part of this scrum and he's not able to get these guys one on one. And so I was there to take video of the press conference to upload it to the F4W YouTube or Twitter channel. And then I was going to go back with Dave and then we were going to do interviews. But I just remember Satin was like, what the heck? Like, they don't let us interview anybody. And then little did he know that I was like, oh, Dave and I get to interview Kenny and Tony Khan one on one. And I was like, whoops, like that's probably he's going to not be happy that we got to do that. But yeah, the whole thing of just do like I had with all my radio experience, I didn't really have a lot of experience with just going like recorder, mic, go on, you know, just on the road, just pick it. Like I'm just going to ask you these questions. So that was really, you know, a really good opportunity in doing that. And now, you know, we just interviewed Adam Cole the other day and I was just like, wow, if you sit these guys down and you ask them quality questions and they're into it, they give you such thoughtful answers. And I kind of went now you get to do this. So I'm going to ask you about this now. You get to do the WWE stuff, which we don't get to do. They don't want WWE. They don't allow WWE to talk to us. But because you guys are local radio, you get to do that stuff. So how, like, I know you've interviewed AEW, you've interviewed WWE. Like, do you attack those interviews a little differently, knowing that maybe the WWE stuff is you know, you kind of need to be a little more storyline, whereas AEW, maybe you don't have to be?
It's, I will say this, and for anyone listening, you know, please know, like, interviewing wrestlers is probably one of the toughest type of interviews you can do compared to, like, a musician, an actor, actress, comedian, because wrestlers are playing a character more or less. So it's a very fine line, or there's a lot of gray area of how do you approach this interview?
Yeah.
Do you ask them questions more or less in kayfabe to what you see on TV and just play the game of more or less you're an extension of what's going on TV, like, you know, backstage interviewer Byron Saxton on Raw. You're kind of just asking like those basic questions just to kind of help tell the story or promote the storyline that they're in. Or do you kind of go a little bit more deeper and kind of ask them, you know, questions that maybe will pull back the curtain a little bit and reveal a little bit of the magic? It depends on the person. It's a case-by-case situation as far as who you interview, their mood, the type of character they are, how much they want to protect the business. So it's very tough. It's, like I said, case-by-case. Some people who are very, like, professional and very by the book and give very PR-friendly answers and, you know, positive, upbeat answers. Like, you know, I interviewed Bianca Belair. Love talking to her. She's awesome. A big fan of her. But her answers when I interviewed her were very professional and just kind of straight to the point and just kind of, you know, like, I'm trying to think how I could say it. Like, it was just really playing the game of like what's on TV, and she's very positive. But like, you know, someone like a Cody Rhodes or Jericho, I'm trying to think of someone else who I talked to that like had no problem kind of revealing a little bit what went behind the scenes.
Sure.
You know, Jericho's very open about everything, it feels like. And, you know, he would tell, like I said, open up like the magician revealing a little bit of the magic. And so It's really about case by case. And so it's just tough. You just got to kind of play the game. And that's something I kind of know going into it. When I do my research, you know, I'll research a guest and kind of see how they handled themselves in other interviews, see what questions were asked, what worked, what didn't work, and how to frame my own questions. And so it's tough because I feel like in an interview, depending how much time you got, there's only so much room you can like get an interview going, get that rapport with them. And maybe when you get each other comfortable, maybe they're willing to open up more. But then unfortunately, like, time runs out and you I was just getting going here. Guy, I won their trust. But, you know, for me, it's like, number one, you got to promote what they're promoting and like get through that. And then by doing so, are you promoting like a storyline with that, you know, what they're going through at the time on TV, just play the game of like what's going on. And then maybe like, you know, later ask a question, maybe about a previous storyline, how that story came to be. And if they're willing to kind of explain a little bit, like whose idea was it, who did what, and then you kind of learn more about like behind the scenes, how things work. So, and then like, you know, it's oh, there you go. That's awesome.
Yeah, so for video folks, this is the photo, and this is still, so that's the recorder that I still have.
Yep.
That. And then those are the Shure mics that I've had for now, gosh, cause that was like 5 years ago.
Yep.
So the you know, it's the same equipment. It works, it's clutch. And this is, you know, the first time that we ever interviewed Kenny Omega. I think we've done him twice, at least two or three times in most thoughtful interview that wrestling interview that I've ever done. Brian Danielson right there. Adam Cole was right there as well. But yeah, no, go back to what you were saying. I didn't even I was trying to test and see if that would work.
Well, no. So and I'm kind of bringing that up because keep in mind for the fans out there who are watching various creators, interviewers, interviews with different wrestlers, I kind of get mad when people get critical. Oh, why'd you ask this? Why didn't you ask that? And it's like, you're not in our shoes of asking these questions and kind of how to play that game with the wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's certain things they're just not going to answer or they're not going to spoil anything. So even for me, like I've been lucky enough to interview Tony Khan 4 times now.
Yeah.
And I'm at a point now where I kind of know he's in promo mode all the time. He ends every answer with promoting and tune in Dynamite this week, tune in the Rampage this week or the pay-per-view this weekend. But what I'm saying is there's certain questions you want to ask. You got to accomplish. You're the middle person. You're the middle person between the wrestler and the product and the fans. You're promoting this wrestler, you're promoting their brand, the show, whatever, to the fans. So hopefully they'll tune in and keep, you know, become a fan, you know, long term, all that stuff. And vice versa, you're representing the fans, trying to ask questions that they want to know the answers to. And I feel like that's such a powerful position. Like, I think that's the old school influencer. You're that middle person. That's what I love about radio. You're that middle person between, it's like the next best thing being a rock star.
Yeah.
And so with that being
said, you know, the opposite sex is probably not into you as much as they would be a rock star.
Exactly. Yeah, no, totally.
Or so, the same sex. It doesn't matter either way.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like when it comes to like interviews, it's tough because you're trying to play that game. And, you know, for me, like, I'm trying to maintain good relations with the PR team and stuff. And, you know, I have their trust to interview all these big names and I want to do right by them. So, but at the same time, I know I want to ask questions that people find interesting and get content, and, you know, we'll make headlines on different news websites and all that stuff. So it's very tough. So please to like wrestling fans out there, you know, listen, I know not every interview is going to be great, but, you know, keep in mind the person interviewing them, you know, there's only so much they can do with the wrestler. Cause I feel like they're one of the toughest type of people to interview.
All right. Talk about your shows. Talk about where people can find you.
So from the radio standpoint, so I here in the San Francisco Bay Area, I work at 107.7 The Bone. We're the rock of the Bay, the rock station. If you go to our website, 107.7thebone.com, if you're outside the Bay Area, you can stream us online, or if you're in the Bay Area, just, you know, tune on your radio or the app, the Bone app, 107.7 The Bone. Follow us on social as well. I produce the morning show, Lamont Antonelli. We're on 6 to 10 a.m. I'm also the assistant program director, so I do all the behind-the-scenes stuff with Chasta, who, shout out Chasta, who's our program director. She's been my biggest supporter. She always encourages me to go out and do stuff. Like, she says, yeah, go to WrestleMania, get all these interviews, do it. Like, she pushes me. So I love Chasta for that. She's like the big sister I never had. But I'm also on the weekends too myself. So I'm on 3 to 8 Saturdays, Sundays 3 to 7. So you want to tune in, you can. Pacific time.
You don't have a day off.
I know. I do. Break fourth wall. I luckily I can record a lot of stuff from home now. So, yeah, but I'm, on the weekends,
smart.
I'm recording.
Very smart. Yeah. Very smart.
But for my actual podcast, In the Click, you know, click like the old click group, Shawn Michaels stuff. So KLIQ. So follow us, subscribe to us where we get your podcasts at. We're on all the major podcast platform. Subscribe to us on YouTube.
Who does that show with you?
Oh, so right now I do it with Brian Tronic. So yeah, going back, Jimbo, summer 2020, he left. He just was following other projects, specifically, you know, he wanted to do wrestling commentary. So he just couldn't do the podcast anymore. So now I do the podcast with Brian Tronic. Great guy. I love working with Brian. We've been doing it for about over a year now. He's awesome. He's an amazing talent as well. As far as, he has a great positive outlook on things too. So I love working with Brian Tronic. Follow him at Brian Tronic. But yeah, at In the Click on social media, intheclick@gmail.com. And if you want to follow me on my social media, Baby Huey Official on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Baby Huey 83. And sorry, that was a mouthful of everything. But yeah, I'm all over the place if you couldn't tell already.
All right, John, shutting down the show. So just a reminder to folks, next week we will be in our new time slot, a day later than usual. Hopefully it'll work out for everybody. And like I said, we're hoping to do some live streams as well as a part of the new schedule, especially if we can go a little bit earlier on certain Thursday nights. So wrapping it up, any last thoughts on stuff this week?
No, it was a fun week of wrestling, and you know what's going to happen this weekend? More news, more chaos.
Yeah.
Dave's going to be running around, hair on fire, so.
Yeah.
The usual.
Yeah, absolutely. Baby Huey did say he wanted to hang out at Dave's one of these times. So we'll
talk about that, and we'll talk about something off air that would be kind of fun to do with Baby Huey and all that stuff, so, yeah.
All right, so what we're done here. We will see y'all next week in our new time slot. So for John, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.